Naples. DC.
Romo Seltzer's Vox Pop, Travel Hall, and Ed Sullivan of the New York Daily, men who have recently seen and photographed gallant carrier the Franklin. Sullivan. Come in, Anna
Hall. And this is Ed Sullivan's laboratory. You know, that's the photographic services that we don't know Vox Pop. Now, here's a shutterbug who 3.5 years of service with a carrier looks like a kid. From Cambridge, Edward Patrick O'Hara.
I've got a bit of Irish in me. My grandmother's name was Bogan.
Well, that makes you in like Flynn, doesn't it?
I'm in like Flynn, thank you. Were you a shutterbug in civilian life?
That's right. Mm-hmm. I had my own camera.
Mention?
Well, I was radioman, radar, and gunner until we dropped our load and then back and took our pictures.
Mm-hmm. And what did you go back for photographs for?
Why? Well, we had to photograph damage done so the preceding raids would know what was left on the target, torpedo, and the bomb.
Mm-hmm. And reconnaissance, too?
Reconnaissance, all intelligence work.
Oh, I see. Well, you photographed them before invasions?
We usually cover before invasions.
What places did you photograph for that purpose?
We photographed Guam. That was one of our toughest.
Mm-hmm.
We flew there. We flew 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the afternoon. Returning fighter pilots that flew with us, who were recently with the RAF, reported it was the heaviest concentration of fire we ever flew to.
And you did two shows that day,
We did two shows. Repeat.
I see. And what were you doing all that time while you were flying back and forth that full hour?
Well, I was taking pictures and praying.
I bet. Well, is that the one that got you the air medal?
That's the one that got the pilot out of the air medal.
Well, you must have had a pretty good pilot.
We had one of the best. We up in Hajima, just south of Chichijima one time, and he pulled a coordinated attack all alone against this one island. We lost our fighter planes, and after bombing and strafing and photographing, we got back, and we're so full of holes, we just threw the plane away.
And that was a coordinated attack.
That was
one
single coordinated attack.
What was that pilot's name?
That was Lieutenant George Campbell from Pelham Bay in New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what kind of camera did you operate?
Well, we operated these Fairchild 20-inch cameras, high-speed aerial cameras.
Still?
Still cameras. Well, we operated movies along with them.
Well, so you had to be able to do everything, yeah?
We had to be ambidextrous. I'd be a good camera.
I see. Say, we hear that you're getting married soon.
Yes, woman.
Yeah.
Next Sunday, to be exact.
Next Sunday?
Next Sunday.
Well, a week from now, well, you'll be an old married man.
Oh, I'd say a week. Well, 30 hours a week from now, I'll be an old married man.
Well, have you everything for the wedding?
Well, I got a ring and diamond and a watch and... Well, that's the most expensive part, the left arm, anyway.
Oh, I see.
Of course, the one thing, an apartment in Washington is pretty hard to get.
Well, you can just keep talking, brother. Well, Pat, Romo Seltzer has something for you to use after that wedding and all the rest of your life, incidentally. You know, General Eisenhower received a silver service today, so we don't want to let the Navy be left behind. So here's a lovely 36-piece service of sterling silverware made by the National Silver Company. You like that?
Boy, that's swell.
That's not all. Knowing you wanted to go up to the mountains for your honeymoon, we called Fred Waring up at his Shawnee Inn near Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. That's a really beautiful country. And he's going to be looking for you there next Monday night. You think you can make it?
I'm going to do my darndest.
And a week's stay up there is on us. So have a good time, happiness, and good luck to you. Photographers made first class, Edward Patrick O'Hara. Okay, Ed.
And now representing the Navy Photo Service, Okinawa, Lieutenant Collier Young. Lieutenant, give me some of your background. Are you married?
I'm married, yes.
Mm-hmm. Where do you come from? Let's move right in here to the mic, Collier.
From Indianapolis, Indiana.
Did you go to school out there?
At school at Dartmouth.
At Dartmouth? What year?
1930.
Mm-hmm. And after you finished up at Dartmouth in 1930, where'd you go?
Went to New York.
And then from New York?
To Hollywood, California.
To Hollywood, California.
That's
and
right.
With whom did you work out there?
The last with Mr. Goldwyn, Samuel
Goldwyn. Sam Goldwyn?
That's right, yeah.
Well, certainly a far cry from the Goldwyn glamour girls to Okinawa.
It's a pretty far stretch, yeah.
Now, Collier, as I understand it, the mission, the purpose of your mission and the photographers at Okinawa is to get a pictorial record of the Japanese suicide plane, is that true?
That's correct, yes.
And what do they call them in Japanese? There's some...
They call it kamikaze.
What does that mean?
It means the divine tempest.
Uh-huh. Now, did you get at any time during the exciting engagements at Okinawa, did you get a complete pictorial record of a Japanese suicide plane?
Yes, I think the Navy got an excellent coverage on it. As a matter of fact, the public will get to see the coverage that was done out there on July 19th.
Will that be in color or black and white?
That will be in black and white and a picture for the public released under the title The Fleet That Came to Stay.
That's a wonderful title for it. Now, who got the best shots, would you say? What photographer got the best shots?
Well, they all exhibited such tremendous courage and resourcefulness that it's hard to single anybody out. There was one lad that looked like it was his first, and it was certainly his longest trip from home, named Robert Joseph Walton.
Where did he come from?
Comes from Long Island, Westbury, Long Island.
Well, now, under what circumstances did he get his picture?
Well, he was on watch while the other photographic crew was were chow, and it was about dusk, and a Jap plane made a long run on his ship, and he picked it up as it came out of the clouds, stood right with it, never left it. As the ship came closer and closer, the guns, of course, opened up, and but he fought with his camera, and he stayed right. The plane crashed the ship, knocked camera out of his hand, and I think he took a pretty severe fall.
But he lost the film, or did the film come out?
The film came out fine and will be used in the picture.
Well, that's going to be in that picture that's going to be released shortly.
That's correct, yes.
Now, was he the boss of that outfit, this boy, this Walton?
No, his photographic officer was an outstanding Navy photographer, former Paramount cameraman, Lieutenant Dewey Wrigley, who has two Purple Hearts to his credit in the European War.
I think I met him out once on the Cecil DeMille set at Paramount.
He was a cameraman for DeMille, yes.
Isn't that wonderful? Wonderful. Now, what about...
H hour was 8:30 in the morning.
What day?
It was Easter Sunday.
Easter Sunday.
And it was... ironically enough, B-Day, for that particular operation, was called Love Day.
Love Day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And what was the reaction on shore? Did you have a lot of opposition when the Marines were landing?
No, as a matter of fact, when the troops first went in, Marines and the 10th Army, it was strangely quiet, almost ominously quiet.
Mm-hmm.
The first one they'd ever had, I think, in their whole history as a corps. And I heard several of the Marines remarked that they didn't like that silence. They weren't used to it.
And one of the fellows who went ashore on that first wave was Ernie Pyle.
That's right, yes.
Well, thanks a lot, Carl Young. And now Bromo Seltzer has for you first one of the finest silken summer robes from one of the finest stores in Washington that we want you to wear. We have also a 17-jewel, 14-carat gold-case wristwatch and cabochon crystal.
Goodness.
Thank you very, very much, Carl. It's grand to have you.
You've often heard of a case in point. Well, here's a case, and the pointer is Ernest Chappell.
There was this character, Warren, who always saw things the hard way.
So, all right. So I take something for my headache. But how's that going to help my stomach and nerves?
Then he took himself a wife. And his wife took him in hand.
Bill, what you need is a Bromo Seltzer.
So Bromo Seltzer helped this fella to feel better fast. One way, two ways, three ways better.
Honey, get your hat. We're seeing a show tonight.
Yes, Bromo Seltzer brings speedy relief from headache. Not just one way, but three. Sometimes that headache may team up with uneasy stomach and jittery nerves. Then Bromo Seltzer rushes to the relief of all three. First, Bromo Seltzer helps ease headache. Second, Bromo Seltzer helps settle upset stomach. Third, Bromo Seltzer helps soothe those frazzled nerves. So don't experiment with single-acting aids. When you have a headache, get three-way relief for head, upset stomach, and nerves with quick-dissolving, quick-acting Bromo Seltzer. Buy a bottle of Bromo Seltzer from your druggist tonight, and then...
Thank you, Ernie Chappell, and a good old Bromo Seltzer train. Now, back to the Naval Photography Services in Anacostia, and we want you to meet the man who was what they call in the Naval Photographic Service, the project officer at Iwo Jima. He was in charge of getting the film from which to the shores of Iwo Jima came. But because he's a slow-breaking talker, I'll tell you what he was before.
a newspaperman, a writer, a photographer attached to the British in Tunisia, psychological warfare officer with our army in France. He's about my age and condition. From Marion, Ohio, and New York City, Lieutenant Commander John McClain. John, we know you're not married. You're not engaged, even?
No. Nothing in the offing. I'm too repulsive.
Ah, good-looking, good-natured fellow like you. Well, let's forget about your other careers and concentrate on this Iwo Jima project. Why did they want it?
Well, they wanted, first of all, an operational record of the entire operation, principally for use in the Navy, for the archives, and for the files.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a little different than going on location for a Hollywood picture, wasn't it?
Considerably.
Mm-hmm. But you organized it the same way, didn't you?
Yes, we were given a complete green light on the whole project. We were given the operational report, which is a lot like Forever Amber, only it's about that long, but a little harder reading. And from that, we made prepared a script, very much like a motion picture script.
Real shooting script, then. Well, did you rehearse it?
Yes, they had a dry run at Maui before the operation, and we had our men spaced there just the way we had in the way they were to be in the final operation. Then after they came back, we developed their film and were able to view it and point out mistakes they'd made.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you got all ready for this thing on, say, D-Day, whenever it was there at Iwo. Suppose it had been a cloudy day.
Well, we'd have postponed the invasion.
Oh, well, how many men did you have on the cameras there?
We had 100, about 60 Navy and 40 Marine.
Any Coast Guards?
And Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get the plug in.
Well, how about the, how was the work divided? The Marines took over on land, is that how they did
that's
it?
That's right. The Navy was spaced throughout the disposition of ships. And as soon as the Marines hit the beach, they took on from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Marines certainly did a good job and all that. How many were left after it was over?
How many of our people were...
Yes, how many of the photographers were left?
Well, we had about 17 casualties.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of them must have been hit when the shell landed so close that it knocked over the camera. I remember that.
Actually not, fortunately.
Yeah. Well, when did you collect the film?
Well, on D-Day, we had a special LCI assigned to us.
And you went through all that mortar fire?
No, we were able to go around through the ships. We didn't get fired at too much.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah. You, your skipper was very happy to take you, I suppose.
Well, he took us if the order was given, but before he started out each time, he said, "Is this journey really necessary?"
Well, don't you think that it's more effective in Technicolor, this picture?
I think it adds tremendously to the picture. I think it gives it probably 50% more.
Well, I know that the color in it, I'll never forget that Marine who had been hit in the mouth and was going by running, and that really, really hits the looker, I'll tell you, the seer.
Well, we blew the film up to 35 black and white and did all our cutting from that. And as we viewed it in black and white, there were so many things that we didn't see that we saw later in Technicolor. Mm.
Well, I just want to tell all of you people out there that if you've seen To the Shores of Iwo Jima, you'll know what we're talking about. And if you haven't, you should, because you'll feel yourself more as if you'd been there. It'll hurt you, but you'll want to back up our fighting men all the more. I want to thanks very much, John, for being with us tonight and for all the behind-scenes touches. Now, Bromo Seltzer has for you, for your 80-year-old dad out there in Marion, who still gets around quite a lot, a swell two-suiter suitcase, and for you, a couple of hard-to-get and very desirable items. First, a Parker 51 pen and pencil set that's in gray and silver, and a sterling silver cigarette case that'll be engraved with your initials. Thank you very much, and glad to have you.
And now, from the USS Franklin, photographer's mate, first class, Harold C. Nyby. Harold, I guess we'll have to move this microphone up for you. Well, what does this C in your name stand for?
Christian.
Christian? Mr. Christian, come here. Where do you come from there? How big are you?
6'3".
6'3"?
6'3", yes.
What do you weigh?
220 pounds.
220? What are the size? Those landing craft that you wear for shoes. What size is that?
12.
Size 12. Huh? Where do you come from, Harold?
Hollywood, California.
Hollywood, California, huh? Where'd you work? What studio did you work out there?
Warner Brothers Studio.
Warner Brothers? Well, what director in particular?
Mike Curtiz.
Old Mike Curtiz, our old pal. That's very, very interesting. Have you got any other relatives out on the coast?
Oh, yes. My father works at Warner Brothers.
Is that so?
My brother works there.
Your brother?
My brother-in-law.
Your brother-in-law?
My brother-in-law. My sister used to work there, and my uncle works there.
Just a moment. Is your name Nivey or Warner?
Nivey.
Now, when did you shove off on the Franklin?
February the 7th, from the West Coast.
From the West Coast? Well, February 7th? Well, it was on March 19th. This is the saga. It was just about a month later that things started happening on the Franklin.
Yes, sir.
Tell us what happened that morning,
well,
March 19th.
At 06:30, on the morning of March the 19th, my chief told me to take a high-speed Mitchell topside for the takeoff. I took this camera up topside, and it wouldn't run, and I was ordered by my lieutenant, Lieutenant Smith, to run down and get a portable 35-millimeter camera, which I did, mm-hmm. and I ran both ways.
Where did you get the camera?
Down in the photo lab.
Well, there were men working there, associates
of
yours?
Photographers.
Now, you ran out of there?
I ran out of there and up two ladders, topside, mm-hmm. stepped out of the island hatch, and the bomb came through the flight deck.
Just as you stepped out, you saw this thing happen.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And
what happened downstairs in the photo lab?
All those men were killed below, and I was up there just 30 seconds ahead of that explosion. Mm-hmm.
And what was the scene on the deck? Is the bomb...
Well, this plane was just taking off, and it went over this gap that the bomb had made, and the bomb exploded and blew this plane into the air, killing the occupants of this plane. I ran forward and took pictures of as much as I could, and gave
some of those wonderful pictures we saw of that ship when it came into New York.
In the newsreel, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, in all of this chaos and the smoke and the flames on the deck, which are represented in the picture, what was there somebody who took control of it?
Yes, Father O'Callaghan seemed to take control.
What did he have you do?
He organized parties to go in and fight fire and carry the wounded.
Save life.
Mm-hmm. Save life. And
you'd say he was as brave as he's made out to be by Captain Garris?
I would say he was the bravest man I've ever seen in this world so far.
He was. Well, that's all of the record of that ship. Nobody will ever understand how you fellas got the ship back home, because that was incredible. And now, thank you very, very much, Harold Nivey. And Bromo Seltzer has for you, first, something to fit in with your hobby, making miniature airplanes. A model gasoline motor, complete with condenser, coil, and wire. And a Croton Aquamatic Serviceman's wristwatch. And for that certain girl, a Claire Potter chartreuse, mind you, chartreuse, shark skin bathing suit, a two-piece bathing suit. Thank you very, very much.
Well, diploma time is here, and while they're handing out the honors, Bromo Seltzer deserves highest honors for work well done, says Ernest Chappell.
Yes, friends, when you think back over the many times Bromo Seltzer has saved the day by helping to relieve your headache, you'll agree that it's a mighty valuable product, that it rates a regular place in your medicine chest. For Bromo Seltzer acts quickly, helps bring rapid relief from headache, relief for that upset stomach and jittery nerves that may accompany such a headache. So don't be satisfied with single-acting aids. Turn to time-tested Bromo Seltzer, the three-way, fast-way, effective relief from headache. You can take Bromo Seltzer after it settles or while it's still fizzing. Caution, use only as directed. For persistent or recurring headaches, see your doctor. Close in on ordinary headache with quick-acting Bromo Seltzer. Enjoy fast three-way relief for head, stomach, and nerves. A product of the Emerson Drug Company, Bromo Seltzer comes in four popular sizes. Buy a bottle from your druggist tonight. be prepared to...
Fight headache three ways!
Well, Ernie, you're right there with that good advice. And now, of course, back again with the Naval Photographic Services in Anacostia, Maryland. And we're beginning to see that all of this branch of the Navy under Captain Gene Markey is a pretty big outfit. Now, a young man, 30, who was air plot officer on the carrier Essex before he became Commander McLean's assistant on the Iwo Jima project. From Beverly Hills, California, Lieutenant David Hopkins. Say, Lieutenant, we know you're married and you have four little girls. By any chance, are you out to break Eddie Cantor's record?
Well, it's a little early to tell, Warren. Don't forget the official tally isn't in yet.
Oh, I see. We don't know just where we're coming out on time here, so let's present you with your Bromosulsa gift right now. For your ranch house, we have two blood-red antique-finished toll table lamps and a portable... How do you like them? Are they all right? Oh, they're beauties. And also a portable electric record player that's with a tone and volume control. So now, if you'll talk, we'll go ahead.
Well.
What, did you get into any of that air plot officer business in the Iwo?
Yes, I did, Warren. Because of the experience I'd had there, they had me set up in collateral duty and joint operations aboard the command ship. Mm-hmm. I worked particularly with Air Sea Rescue, and that was a very satisfying experience.
Well, in the picture, I noticed that the Marines were pinned down and they called for help. Did you have anything to do with...
That's right.
...sending out the help?
We directed the air support missions from this room. We controlled the aircraft, and we directed them against the objectives and the installations that were pinning down the Marines.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the most memorable moment to you out there?
Well, Warren, I think the thing that all of us remember, just like all of you do back here, was the time when the Marines assaulted Suribachi. The time when Admiral Turner gave the order to cease fire, and we all sat back waiting, wondering how that small detachment of Marines would do as they assaulted that very steep mountain. We waited, and they went up, and they got to the top. And we saw the flag go up, and we heard the captain of our ship pass the word that the American flag has been raised on top of Suribachi. It was very thrilling.
Hmm. Well, it looks like Joe Rosenthal's famous picture with the men putting up the flag.
That's right. That's right. That was a great picture. But few people know that Marine Sergeant Bill Janost, a Marine photographer, was standing right alongside Joe Rosenthal. Mm-hmm. And he shot everything that Joe shot in color motion pictures.
And that's what you're seeing to the shores
of
the
ocean. That's what we see in our picture. And 2 days later, Bill Janost was hit by a sniper.
Hmm. Well, Harold Nyby said that the bravest man he saw was Chaplain O'Callaghan. And you photographers did have the chance to see a good many wonderful acts. Do you remember any?
Yes, I think the bravest thing that I saw were the skippers and the enlisted men of the gunboats that went in close to Iwo Jima on D-2 day to knock out shore installations. They knew they were in for plenty of trouble. They saw the fire come at them. But they kept on going, and they got hit and hit bad. Our photographers on those ships did the same thing. And they kept on going, too.
Collier, who would you say was the toughest fellow you ever saw, the gamest fellow you saw in the Pacific?
Well, the toughest man I saw in the Pacific was, curiously enough, also the gentlest man I ever saw.
What do you mean by that?
He's a lad from Texas, Dallas, Texas, I think. His name is Hutchins, and he was formerly here at the Photographic Science Laboratory, which has produced so many of the fine combat photographers. And he had been in a foxhole for 5 or 6 days and was being taken back to the ship in a jeep when the jeep stopped, and there was an orphan Okinawan child, aged about 4, crying and deserted in the road. And Hutchins got out of the jeep, picked up the child, and the only way he knew to comfort the child was to sing to it. So he sang to this Okinawan child with kind of wondering eyes Texas rain songs as they went down the road and took the child to safety.
Texas lyrics in Okinawa, huh?
In Okinawa.
Wonderful.
Say, how about you, John, Commander McLean?
Well, strangely enough, when I think of the most heroic person, I think of a whole division. It's a far cry from the Pacific, but I spent a little time with the 1st Division in France. They had some very severe losses going over the beach on D-Day. And, of course, those wounded were evacuated back to England at at the end of about 2 weeks, 160 some of the wounded had gone AWOL from their hospitals in England and had thumbed their way back to the Channel and gone across and rejoined the 1st Division.
That's a game bunch of men, all right. Say, Pat O'Hara, for some reason or other, I'll bet that pilot of yours was tops to you.
Well, I think he's the bravest man in this whole world. On August the 4th, we were shot down 400 miles from Tokyo and in pretty rough sea, and it was just our choice. It was his or mine, and he held the raft while I got in, and, well, I'm here today, and he isn't.
Well, you mean,
he gave his life for me.
There was only time for...
There was only time. The sea was pretty rough. We had a typhoon, and one man could hold it for another one. He was pretty badly wounded, and he ordered me into the boat. And, well, I'm here.
But you know, one of the most wonderful stories I've heard of heroism was on the USS Franklin, Dr. Fox. His men were below in the sick bay. There were 10 of them. In sick bay, a bomb came in, cut them off. He took his oxygen bottles in there, and when they found him and all the men dead, here was Dr. Fox, who was a great friend of Nivy here, as a matter of fact. They found Dr. Fox in death, too, with his finger on the trigger catch of the oxygen bottle. And I think if you want another instance, John, you were talking about Marines before, John Bazzaloni, who was in your Iwo Jima picture, at least his knapsack and his helmet were. John Bazzaloni of the Marines, who won the Congressional Medal of Honor and then volunteered to go out back out on the Pacific. That was a real person.
Well, do any of you fellows remember anyone else?
Well, there's a couple of Marine photographers whose names I'd like to mention as being very courageous and doing a very... exhibiting a lot of initiative. One of them, in particular, is named Luft, who took some of the very fine aerial shots you saw. Mm-hmm. And another one named Cockrell, who was assigned a medical story and did a terrific job of it.
Well, I know those the aerial shots of the flame-throwing tanks were really terrific in that. And it showed how a flame-throwing tank really put out against just an individual flamethrower on the ground. How much time do we have here, Raj? Well, I think it's time that we close this off, but all of you listeners just want to tell you that here are a few of the unsung heroes that we're sort of glad to sing about. That's the way you feel about it, fellas?
Pretty good.
Well, we hate to leave you men of the Navy Photographic Services, but Vox Pop has to shove off, you know.
Very salty war, and where to next week?
Why, to the sidewalks of New York, Ed, and very hot they are, too. As we'll visit Public School 37 in New York, where we'll talk to some very interesting children.
You know, from New York schools, just like PS 37, has come a lot of familiar American names. Irving Berlin, Al Smith, the great Cardinal Hayes, Sergeant Meyer Levin, who was Colin Kelly's pal, Lou Gehrig of the Yankees, and that's just naming a few of them.
How about Ed Sullivan? No, that's from Portchester, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know that you won't want to miss this one. It's going to be very exciting next week, so be sure to listen to Vox Pop.
I'll be there, Warren. Good night, folks.
So long, everybody.
Be sure to join Vox Pop, the show that travels America, next Monday night, same time, same station, when Warren and Ed Sullivan visit Public School number 37 in New York. Friends, your family's health and comfort are vitally dependent on your neighborhood druggist. In war as in peace, he is at your service. But these days he faces unusual problems, shortage of manpower, shortage of merchandise. Be patient. Let's all pull together. Your cooperation will best help your druggist to help you. And remember...
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.